Earlier this week, Republicans used the Senate filibuster to stop major voting rights legislation from moving forward. Though Democrats in the Senate could have voted to change the filibuster and advance the measure, they didn't have support from each member. The holdouts were Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. This is just the latest in a long history of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. We wanted to look back at how the tool has been used, how it's changed, and how it's sometimes been worked around by both parties. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you think of the Senate filibuster, what comes to mind? What do you think of the changes in the filibuster over the years? Do you think that Democrats should have gotten rid of it or changed it to enable the passage of this particular voting legislation? Or do you think it is a good idea? It makes it harder to make big changes. Call in with your thoughts or your questions on the U.S. Senate and the filibuster at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. David Cannon is a political science professor and Leon Epstein faculty fellow at UW-Madison. He's an expert on American political institutions, in particular Congress. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you, Rob.
Can you remind us, first of all, in basic terms, what the filibuster tool is, as of right now, anyway?
So the filibuster allows for unlimited debate in the Senate, and it's been a rule that's been in place since 1806 in the Senate. And there was actually no way to even stop debate until the cloture motion was invented in 1917. So that's been around for a little over 100 years, and that's the way you stop a filibuster. And that's where today we have this 60-vote threshold needed to stop a filibuster. So today a senator will announce, I'm going to filibuster a bill. If you want to bring that bill back to life, you have to get 60 senators on board to be able to stop that filibuster. Now, the rule has been changed over the decades. Sometimes it was two-thirds of the total number of senators. Sometimes it was two-thirds of those present and voting. They lowered it to 60 vote threshold in 1975. So that's been basically the system we've had in place since 1975, is that 60 votes to stop a filibuster.
I want to track back in the history there. In that original system, if I'm hearing you right, it would take exactly one senator to stop a vote, right? If I could keep going and delaying a vote and they couldn't vote to stop me, that's all it took?
That's right. And so, yeah, from 1806 is when they got rid of the motion to recommit. That's what the House of Representatives has, which is a way of cutting off debate. And that's a simple majority vote in the House to do that. They used to have that in the Senate for the first couple decades of the Senate. And then they got rid of it because they thought, oh, we don't need this. It was actually Aaron Burr is the person who came up with the idea of getting rid of the motion to recommit. And so they ended up having that filibuster in place then. All the way, up until 1917, there was no way you could stop it. Now, of course, no single person could hold the floor forever. And it was, honestly, it was not invoked that often. It was pretty unusual for someone to use the unlimited debate in order to sort of, gridlock the system.
Talking to David Cannon, political science professor at UW-Madison, looking at the Senate and the filibuster. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the filibuster changed? Why? What case would you make for or against getting rid of it? Or what questions do you have? 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. A lot of the focus this last week has been on Democrats in the U.S. Senate in particular, a couple key senators saying they didn't want to change it. I want to give a listen to Senator Kyrsten Sinema, mentioned her a few minutes ago. She gave a speech on Thursday of last week where she laid out her opposition to doing anything to the filibuster in order to pass voting rights legislation. Here's a little of what she said, making a point about bigger problems.
And while I continue to support these bills, I will not support separate actions that worsen the underlying disease of division infecting our country. The debate over the Senate 60-vote threshold shines a light on our broader challenges. There's no need for me to restate my longstanding support for the 60-vote threshold to pass legislation. There's no need for me to restate its role protecting our country from wild reversals in federal policy.
And that's an argument made, David, for the filibuster, protecting the country, she says, from wild reversals in federal policy, making it harder to swing things back and forth as party control over the Senate changes. Could you talk about that that argument?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's certainly something to that. If you have a 60-vote threshold, it makes it harder to change policy than if you have a simple majority of 51 in the Senate. And so it is harder to have policy swing back and forth with a supermajority threshold. But I think what she sort of misses there is another really important part of the filibuster we haven't talked about yet. And that is the deviation from the longstanding practice of the talking filibuster. And, you know, some of your listeners might know the classic movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Jimmy Stewart, you know, holding forth on the floor of the Senate in the old-fashioned kind of filibuster, the way that, you know, Strom Thurmond did, who still holds the modern-day record of 24 hours and 18 minutes in 1957, trying to kill a civil rights bill in 1957. So that was the old-fashioned way of holding a filibuster, where you actually would have to talk. Well, starting in 1970, they actually implemented a two-track system, where if you wanted to filibuster a bill, it would just go on the filibuster track, and the rest of the business of the Senate could go forward. And so this idea that the filibuster is somehow, you know, preventing wild swings back and forth from legislation really rarely happened back in the old traditional system of the talking filibuster that was in place until 1970, because the filibuster was rarely used. Like it was used sometimes between 0 and 7 times from the 1930s up through 1970. It didn't come into play that often. So only recently, when you have this filibuster track where a senator just has to announce, I'm going to filibuster this bill, and it basically is dead unless you can get that 60 votes to bring it back to life through the cloture vote. Only since that time have we actually seen the filibuster used as an actual threshold to pass all major legislation. So this is something that's, you know, not one of these traditions that goes back to 1806, the way that some senators talk about it.
Tuesday night of this week, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota talked on MSNBC's The Last Word. Here's what she said about the way the filibuster works now.
We are actually not talking about getting rid of the filibuster, even though if left to my own, Lawrence, I would do that. We're actually talking about reforming the rules of the Senate and taking what is essentially a secret process where literally people just stop the vote. They make it so you can't actually get to a conclusion of an issue and they go home or raise money or whatever. That, as I said, is not how this place is supposed to work. So we're taking what is essentially a secret behind closed doors process and making it public with the standing filibuster.
David, what do you think of that idea of getting rid of that filibuster track you just mentioned a few minutes ago and making somebody actually do something to maintain a filibuster?
Exactly. So that's exactly what Senator Klobuchar is talking about, is going back to the way it was before 1970. And so getting rid of that filibuster track, that's the secret process she's talking about. And the standing filibuster is what people often refer to as the talking filibuster. That's what she's talking about bringing back. And I think she's on solid ground there, because, if you look at the historic evidence, back when the cost of a filibuster was high, both in physical terms, you'd have to sit up there, you know, and talk for 24 hours or however long you could hold the floor, and in terms of the business of the Senate, that it stopped everything in the Senate. If you were filibustering a bill, nothing else could happen on the floor of the Senate. Whereas today, with that separate track, the rest of the business of the Senate goes on, and so there's really no cost to a filibuster. And so I think Klobuchar is exactly right. If you went back to that older system of the standing or talking filibuster, it would raise the cost of doing a filibuster. And so we would go back from, you know, today we have as many as, you know, 200, 300 different filibusters in every session of Congress. We'd go back to having, you know, single-digit filibusters. So it would be a rare, unusual thing instead of a common, everyday occurrence.
We're talking about the past, present, and future of the U.S. Senate and the filibuster with UW-Madison political science professor David Cannon. And now we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Were you following the twists and turns this week that led to a filibuster of voting rights legislation earlier this week? What did you think about that process? Do you want to see some kind of change in the filibuster, getting rid of it completely, making it so you have to do something so the Senate comes to a stop so that filibusters are used more rarely? Or do you like the idea that you need, in effect, 60 senators to vote to make just about anything happen. Some exceptions to that. We'll get to those in a minute. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with David Cannon, political science professor at UW-Madison, expert on Congress. We're talking about the filibuster. It was just used by Republicans this week to stop Democrats from moving forward with voting rights legislation and an effort by many Senate Democrats to change the filibuster. That effort fell short. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. If you support Democrats and their congressional agenda, do you want to see them loosen up, weaken the filibuster in some way to pass things? Or do you worry that someone else, Republicans, could use that in the future? If you're a Republican, do you want to see things stay the way they are? Wherever you are across the spectrum, let us know what you think. Or call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Kevin is with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. My comment is, if they want to keep that 60-vote supermajority threshold, then we've got to go back to the standing filibuster. You got to earn it. Do the work. Let people see that that's what's going on. If there's 300 filibusters a year, I believe that's more filibusters per year than they are serving days per year. Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for the call. David.
Yeah, good point by Kevin there that, yeah, there's more filibuster, more than one filibuster a day in terms of the number of days there in session. Yeah, so I completely agree with him that I think that that would be the way to reduce the number of filibusters, is to actually make it costly again to do it, rather than just having that filibuster track that you can put a bill on.
Thanks for that call, Kevin. Let's talk about some circumstances, David, where the filibuster doesn't apply. First of all, reconciliation. Republicans used it, I believe, to pass the Tax Cut and Jobs Act back in 2017. Tried to use it to repeal the Affordable Care Act, fell short because of John McCain. Democrats have used it to pass a COVID relief bill this year, but fell short on the Build Back Better Act with one senator standing in the way. Why is reconciliation a way around the filibuster?
Right. So that's one of the major exceptions, is the reconciliation process, which is tied to the annual budget resolution. And so it's a limited tool because it only can happen once a year, and it has to be directly related to the budget, to the budget resolution. And so you only get one shot to do that. And so, like, Obamacare also is another piece of major legislation they passed through reconciliation back when President Obama's healthcare bill passed. And so it's something that is a major exception, but again, it's limited in that you can only do it once a year. And so it's not something that's a common workaround around the filibuster.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Richard is with us in Waukesha. Richard, hi.
Hi. Yeah, in my opinion, if the Republican Party is going to weaponize the filibuster to grind progress to a halt, I think the Democrats should do the same and show the country why it's so dangerous and prevents us from moving forward in any functional way.
Richard, thanks for the call. David, concerns about the weaponizing of the filibuster. Is there something here about a rise in polarization making parties more prone to use the filibuster when they're in the minority in the Senate?
Yeah, I think that's certainly contributing to the increased use of the filibuster, is the increased polarization that we see in Congress right now, in the Senate, where, you know, for many decades, there was pretty big overlap between Democrats and Republicans. There were a lot of Northeastern, you know, called Romney Republicans, Rockefeller Republicans, were the kind of more liberal Republicans. Then you have the Southern Democrats, who were, you know, quite conservative, you know, way to the right of some of those Republicans. So you have a lot of overlap between the two parties up until about the last 20 years or so. And so that definitely coincides with the increased use of the filibuster, is seeing that growing divide between the two parties in the Senate.
Richard, thanks for that call. We're talking to David Cannon, political scientist at UW-Madison, looking at the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. Still time for your thoughts, your opinions, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, there have been some changes over the last couple decades in the filibuster when it comes to particular kinds of presidential appointments. What has changed?
Right. The big change is there. We're talking about the exceptions before, with reconciliation being a big one. But the other biggest one is the change that happened with presidential nominations. And so especially with battles over court nominations for both lower court, appeals court nominations, but also for the Supreme Court, where in the history of the Senate, up until President Obama was elected, there were a total of 68 judicial nominations that were subjected to a filibuster. In President Obama's first term, so his first 4 years, there were 79. So in 4 years, there were more filibusters of court nominations than there were in the previous 200 years. And so this led Democrats to say, you know, we're not going to put up this anymore. And they got rid of the filibuster for lower court nominations and for cabinet nominations for the president. And those are now subject to simple majority vote. When the Republicans took over in 2017, they removed also then the filibuster for Supreme Court nominations, something that Democrats had not been willing to do. So now for presidential nominations, both to the federal courts and for cabinet level appointments, those are all not subjected to the filibuster because they did change the Senate rules to allow simple majority vote there.
When you lay it all out like that, David, it feels almost like it's a tiny bit dysfunctional. Is there a better way? Like, can we be doing all this stuff in a better way to actually get stuff done?
Well, yeah. And that's why some people say that the answer would be just to have a simple majority vote rather than having a supermajority for anything. And you would have Sinema's, you know, concern that you might get more volatility and, you know, bouncing back and forth from different policies as the control of the Congress changes from one party to the other. But I think there's more sort of institutional stickiness to policy than that. That it's hard to change status quo policies, especially once they become popular. And look at something like Obamacare. You know, the Republicans talked for years about getting rid of that. But when they had the chance, as you pointed out earlier, John McCain, you know, provided the pivotal vote to say, no, we're not going to change that because, you know, millions of Americans now are benefiting from that policy. And so even if you got rid of the filibuster, I don't think you would get these wild swings back and forth, you know, between different policies if the control of Congress changed parties.
Flipping things around, though, you know, when we get undivided control of government, so a president of one party and then both chambers of Congress, held by the same party, the only tool, the only breaks the minority party has is, in a lot of ways, the filibuster. I don't know. Is either party going to be willing to give up that one failsafe that that they would have if they lost complete control?
Well, right. No, it's a really good point. And that certainly has been used in that way by the minority party when they face unified control of the House, the Senate, and the president in the other party. The filibuster has served as an important tool for the minority party. There's no doubt about that. And so that's the flip side of seeing it as obstruction. The flip side is, well, this is, you know, sticking up for the minority party. And there, obviously, it depends on, you know, if you are in the party that's out of power or the party that's in power. So if you're that minority party that's using the filibuster to stick up for what you believe in, the filibuster is a good thing. If you're on the other side, then it's a bad thing. So no doubt that is historically has been a role for the filibuster in not only the recent past, but going back even further.
Taking outside of the party, if I'm someone who voted for a Republican, say, coming into this current session of Congress, or a Democrat coming into, 2017, without the filibuster, I'm basically completely unrepresented. I have, like, my votes and the people who agreed with me in either of those cases are unrepresented in the federal government in some ways, apart from all the talking.
Right. Absolutely. And so that is the role then played by the filibuster. And, you know, take something like voting rights. It's been a very hot issue, you know, since the 2020 election, where, you know, Democrats really pushed that pretty hard to try to enact these federal laws to try to overturn some of the changes that have happened at the state level. And that's what they were trying to change the filibuster for, was to be able to implement those voting rights laws. for the Republicans, you know, they were saying, well, we should be able to implement laws the way we want to at the state level. And having the filibuster then as the tool to protect that at the federal level is definitely an important tool for the minority party.
In our last minute and a half or so, David, what are your thoughts on the future of the filibuster? What kind of changes do you think could actually happen in the next few years?
Yeah, it's given Manchin and Sinema's objections, it's unlikely that they will agree to even what Senator Klobuchar was talking about of the standing or talking filibuster, you know, going back to the previous practice of the higher cost filibuster, if you will. And so I don't think we probably will see that changed, at least, you know, for the rest of this session. Now, if we get, you know, a new majority in the Senate after the midterms of 2022, then we'll see what happens. But I would guess in the next, you know, 4 to 6 years, the filibuster probably will be at least modified to require the standing or talking filibuster.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
That's David Cannon, political science professor and Leon Epstein faculty fellow at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We talked to him today about the filibuster in the U.S. Senate, how it's changed over time, and as we just heard there, what the future could hold. Still time for you to share your thoughts. You can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. That's at Central Time WPR. And follow us on Twitter while you're there.